Happy Monday, everyone. We will give folks a few minutes to come in and then we will get started. All right, shall we get started? We have a pretty short agenda. I hope I shouldn't jinx us by saying that, but it looks like we have a pretty short agenda. We are going to finish up today, hopefully, with what Magnus started us on last week, when we ran out of time on the last two triggers for notices, and we're trying to consolidate or align the triggers for in both the circulation log and the notice policies. So we will get to that. Does anyone have any other agenda items to add? Or any other announcements of any sort? All right. So we have at least one more meeting. Oh, Olga, go ahead.
Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you.
No, not at all.
We switched to sunflower last week, and I was wondering if anyone else here did that, and if they did, if they use Open Athens and connect users from Folio through Open Athens to e-resources. Because that thing broke for us, and I wonder if it's just us or anyone else. So that can be added at the end.
Okay, well, we can talk about it now. That's fine. When you say you're using Open
Open
Athens, you
Athens.
mean on the public side or do you mean your
Yes.
staff users?
Both.
Both.
But yes, and it broke. You cannot log in into Folio, but that's not a problem because it's for other users like community, associate, reciprocal. They don't need to go to Folio, but they do need to connect to databases and library account.
So
So,
that's not working. But are your staff users are able to log into Folio itself, right? Okay. It's just on the discovery side.
Yes.
Okay. Good to know. We only have it on our sandbox environment, and I'm kind of surprised you got it so soon because we didn't get a date until March. Like, we're not getting it till March.
I think we are a guinea pig. We always first, one of the first. Well, not
Gotcha.
just us. It's a cluster, so there should be more.
We're scheduled to upgrade next week on the 16th. I posted a question in the chat. Did you upgrade to Sunflower SP3 or an earlier version?
I think it's SP 2.5, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, we're supposed to go to SP3. And when you're talking about Open Athens and patrons, are you using the OA connector? And that's in addition to another authentication, or is it like the only authentication you have?
Yes, all regular students and employees use ADFS connector,
Okay.
but that's just for those ones who are coming from Folio.
And we have about three of our libraries using the OA connector. They either have a barcode and PIN or they have local SSO. So that's kind of a concern already, but I'm sure those libraries can work. We have, I think, our dry run still up, but I can check and see if they can actually log in and use any resources through their catalog. Do you have any tickets open with EBSCO about this?
Yes, and I'm emailing them every day, and I hear nothing back.
Okay. Have you spoken to either Risha or Soba?
No.
Okay. I'm going to ask the question on our side, not directly, but saying, are there issues with the OA connector or Open Athens we need to be aware of? So if they say anything useful, I'll relate it back to you. Let me go and talk and message them now.
Thank you so much.
Okay, you're
We
welcome.
have some faculty emerita that just going crazy with not being able to do research, and that's how they log in. And you don't want to really cross faculty emerita. They are allowed.
No,
Yes.
they don't. And one of our schools I use as the connector would definitely be raising the same kind of issue. So thanks for letting us know about it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Olga. It's good to know that thing that folks are rolling that out. How are your, I'm curious, Olga, how the permissions to capabilities has gone for your institution?
A little bit of a shock because what they did in dry run was different from what they did in live. In dry run, they created, like, I hope that there would be no hash rows at all because I followed all the instructions they gave. But almost everyone had an additional hash roll. And when I started checking them, they gave every person in the library ability to edit permissions. And that happened because those, when I started looking into it, that comes from regular permissions. I don't like, I think one of them was edit user. That permission includes in itself somehow ability to edit permissions, but it wasn't a case in Ramsons. No one could edit permissions but me and another person. But somehow when they transferred it into roles, everyone was able to edit permissions. Okay, I can deal with that, but and also the same happened with the task, those who people who had tasks app, not many, just a few of us had it. They also there was some permissions in hash roles for tasks. So in general, it would be like 60 permissions added, not permissions, capabilities added in hash roles, which is not big deal, right? You can just unassign them and that's it. After you understand what is happening. But
Right.
in live, what they did, they again put all hash roles, but they put all the permissions that the person had, plus those 60 capabilities. So, first, I'm opening those hash rolls, and they have hundreds of thousands capabilities. And that was a shock because trying to figure out what is different between, like, when you compare a list of 2,000 records in one list and to 2,025 records in another list, that's very difficult to figure out what is different. But at the end, it was the same permissions. They just that they did in dry run, but they added all the existing permissions too. So I was very happy that I figured it out in dry run, because now I could just unassign them. I knew what in them. But comparing that list, like, if I didn't know that, that would be a disaster. That would take me forever to prove that it's the same permissions and just 60 more capabilities that allow everyone to edit permissions.
Well, the good thing is you should only have to clean it up once, and then presumably our migration was like into Sandbox was not quite that messy. Like, we had permission sets that carried over pretty well, but they did still create almost every individual person has a unique permission, and what you're calling hash permissions, I think, because they basically took every, if you had a unique constellation of permissions and sets, then that is what got created as a hash permission for you individually.
It's all the regular ones moved. Everything was assigned, so everyone is able to work. So from that point of view, it's good. It's just for the person who is responsible for this thing, trying to figure out what is in those hash permissions with like long digits and numbers they named with new UIDs, I think. That is
We're planning for upgrade two, and we've seen the same thing in the dry run. There is lots and lots of hashes everywhere. We had an additional problem is that some of our libraries got very creative in adding permissions, not quite understanding you have the right permissions, not all of them. And so they had all the sets, all the neutral permissions, and those made new hashes. We were supporting a what we call a site coordinator says, like the top end. And then sets for like individual facets of work someone does, like catalog or circulation, ERM. But we saw when I was cleaning this up that everyone was adding in two or three of these. So we're going to cut back to a centrally managed recommended set of a super user that can do everything but the social work and things might break the system, a standard user that can do everything but the social work and can't change settings or permissions. And a library student worker. And those are recommended. They don't have to use them, but we can run those centrally now and update as needed. So I was working those this morning. As for the outlook in the near future, we'll have to post documentation for our users to be able to see their user roles. Those they have to change permissions as they maintain, but also instructions for cleanup and just a fair amount of time updating these. It's going to take a while to get them back into a really clean state.
Yeah, I think the route for the new capability sets and roles is really designed to have roles defined with capabilities and then use those as sort of modules to plug in so that we had very nested permission sets, which is not supported. So you have to really say if you're going to have a circ one, circ two, circ three. Circ three has to have all the permissions, all the capabilities that Circ one has and Circ two. And you have to kind of repeat them. But once you've established the roles, they should be relatively easy to maintain. But it is quite an undertaking to make sure that you have them working in the same way that they worked in the old system. I think the hash roll intent was that on day one, nobody loses their permissions while you're figuring out the other stuff. And then once you figure it out, then you could take away the hash rolls, presumably, because they may be duplicated for a while. But it's supposed to be that so that it doesn't break anything when you first migrate.
Yeah, I was going to say the script, at least for the EBSCO-hosted people that they're using, has to do two different ways that they're importing permissions. One is extended and one is compact. The compact script will do kind of what the original permissions transfer did, where they'll look at individual users and just kind of look at the permissions they have and create a new role for each one of those users. And if two or three users have the same permissions, it will use that role for those two or three users. But with our system, it ends up being every single user has a UID permission. The extended one is supposed to copy the current permission sets, but what Olga was saying, what you were saying, is it also creates those UUID sets, which is those random, it seems like random permissions that it doesn't know what to do with them and just creates a role and shoves them in there. We have to clean up our dry run environment so that when we do go to production, it's not a huge mess, but you're right, yeah.
I wasn't sure if we bother cleaning it up, does that even help? If they did the production, if they did the sandbox rollover, aren't they applying the same thing, or are they taking then the permissions that you create in your sandbox environment? I'm not sure, right?
And you could do one of two different things. I mean, I was going to go through and see what kind of like what Algo was talking about is like see what the heck is in those hashtag permissions to make sure that people aren't getting weird things and try to tease those out. And if it's not a massive lift, I may just use the APIs and after we get our production environment, just push new permission sets or new roles and assign them to users via the APIs. Using dry run as a kind of a pattern. Prior to that, when we were planning on doing a complete and utter rewrite of all of our permissions, and that I was actually going to ask the back end FSE team to copy all the roles and who they're assigned to production from our dry run environment. So that way we could set everything up in dry run and just say, we need this copied over to production. We have done asked them to do that for smaller things, and they have done it. Like when we moved to RAM since there was some new mapping that we had to do for, I believe it was Mark or something of that nature. And they went into our dry run environments, tested it there, got everything the way they wanted it. And then we just asked FSE, okay, when you go up to production, we need this data copied from dry run over to production. We don't care how you do it, just do it.
Well, we'll see. We're hoping that our permission sets did work pretty well, and if we get them set up properly, we don't have to remap individual users because they already have the sets assigned. So they just become roles instead of sets. All right. Anything else about Eureka permissions? Olga, it looks like Scott threw in a response he got about the OA connector in the chat. All right, then let's pivot to finishing up what we started on last week, mapping out the triggering events for the notice policies and circ log. What do we have left, Magnus? I remember we had two related to fee fine triggers.
Yeah, pretty much the only two triggers that were in doubt when we started. So I will, I guess it's better that I share my screen again so we can see what it's all about. Let's see. So this is the Jira ticket in question. And I will switch over to the Excel document again. So what we settled on last time was, I think, all of the triggers that we have gone through, we settled for the notice policy name. And the only two who was in question was the last ones down here. So if it should be lost item fee or age to lost fine charged, and also the last one.
I think the discrepancy here was because right now these triggering policies are triggering a notice, and the way they're defined, it makes sense currently because declared loss does not trigger a notice. So there isn't currently a difference between the two. Presumably, if they added declared loss triggering a notice, which is a ticket, there is a ticket in there for it, it would, in theory, this trigger would be the same and could trigger the same notice. Like there's no, well, there's no notice for declared loss right now. But if you were just to implement it, it would trigger the same notice in theory, right? This lost item fees charged, the way it's described, says to me that regardless of how that lost item fee is charged, it's going to be a single trigger, regardless of aged loss versus declared lost. So the current state, it's hard to answer this question now because the current state, and we need to answer it in such a way that it's going to work when that other feature is also developed, if that makes sense. It doesn't sound very coherent, but does that make sense? Because the circ log would be different, right? The circ log trigger would be different if we are to create a declared lost notice.
If the trigger varies, I would agree with then calling it lost item fee rather than age of loss because it wouldn't always be accurate.
The triggering event in the circulation log right now gives more information than would be given if we just use the current triggering event notice policy. Right? Because we wouldn't want to lose the age to lost versus declared lost information in the circ log if that is relevant. Or we could rely on the other entry in the circ log, which is going to say declared lost.
How do we know how far away the works for the declared lost parties, how far away that is?
I do not know off the top of my head where that is in the prioritization, such as it is. Cornelia, do you have any sense of that?
Probably not very high.
Okay. I guess the biggest piece for me in this, then, at this point, is the Tom is going to love this fee versus fine, right? Like, that's the biggest discrepancy because we've sort of used overdue fine as a fine versus a lost item replacement charge is we've used fee. Tom has talked about getting rid of the distinction entirely and just call it charge. But right now, we should just pick one.
So that's actually changed again.
Great.
So the last meeting, we kind of landed on changing everything to fee instead of charge.
Okay.
As Cornelia pointed out, with it being translated, but also with notices and that, it can cause some issues. So we said about instead of using like overdue charge, just using overdue fee. So the fine part of it would be just dropped out.
That's not exactly what I said.
Well, I mean,
Yeah, but never
I
mind. We can discuss it. I gave the information to the German translators, and we can discuss it any other time. Now, what I said was keep the overdue fine and lost item fee, like the names of the different fees as they are, and maybe change the rest, but not the names of the exact fees and fines.
sorry, yeah. My brain is not functioning correctly. That is what you said. Sorry. It's Monday. I don't have caffeine in me yet.
So, does it make sense to keep the triggering event notice policy after the age to loss? So, the triggering event circulation log would end up being aged lost hyphen lost item fee charged. Does that work? Is it too long? I know it's pretty long.
Is it also always going to be correct for libraries that use the thing ages to lost, and then there's some period of time before the lost item fee is charged?
Yes, because this log entry would not appear until that time, right, David? See what I'm
Yeah,
saying?
I don't know
That
enough about that strange. I haven't experienced it, so. Well, it
because
would.
we're.
It yeah, it would. You're right. It wouldn't appear until then, but like. The thing would have aged to lost, and then 3 weeks later, the lost fee would be charged.
Right, and the trigger that we're talking about won't happen until the charge happens. So it's not going to happen in the instance that it ages to lost. This trigger will not happen until the lost item fee is actually charged, and then the line in the circ log will not show up because that is the same event. So I don't think it would matter. Because the trigger is not happening until the fee is charged.
Right, yeah, no, I get that. I guess I'm just if we're looking at the it being, age to lost dash lost item fee charged as being very long, I think it could be argued that the lost item fee charged is really the triggering event in all cases, and that would be enough. But I don't really have a strong opinion about it. This all just gets, a little complicated.
Agreed. Right. I mean, we could just make it lost items fee charged regardless because it you're right. The age to lost piece could be a week before.
I actually kind of like that, is or even splitting them up, or yeah, leave item age to loss as the item actually aging to loss, and then kind of decoupling the age to lost from the fine charged, and just do lost item fee charged.
Yeah, I'm liking that too, because that's actually the trigger. It's not the aging to lost or the declaring lost. It's actually the charge that's
Right.
causing the notice to go out.
And theoretically, that could be automatic or it could be the manual charge.
Yeah, there's so
Just
many
to be
different
clear, question.
circumstances under which it could happen.
Right. But it's always when the thing is charged that's the trigger. Like that's what we're discussing. Does that make sense, Magnus? If it's just what the notice policy is right now?
Yeah. I guess I don't have a strong opinion either way either. And also maybe if we want to separate age to lost and declare to lost in the future, maybe it's that we have to get back to it when that happens instead.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think it makes sense to have it what is actually causing the notice to happen, which is that the fee is being charged or the fee is being adjusted. And right now, the language that is used is fee for replacements and fine for overdues. So I would agree with Cornelia that we keep that distinction here until we make a decision to do something else. But right now, be consistent.
So just to make sure, did we land on the notice policy triggers?
I believe so. Why don't you put them over there and we'll see what. We'll have
How it looks, if it
people. Well,
looks
how does
good,
it look?
we'll
Yeah,
keep it.
exactly. All right. So then at least it's consistent. So when someone is new and is testing things out and is creating their notice policies, there is, when the notice goes out, it is logged in the same way, the same trigger as it is in the policy itself.
Yeah.
I think that sounds great.
Then I will add this to the Jira and then talk to Stephanie and see
Great.
how to get this rolling.
Amazing.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Any additional questions before we wrap this one up? All right. Fantastic. Thank you so much for your work on this, Magnus. It's really nice to have this in written up and ready to go. All right. Any additional items to raise? Our next meeting, our Thursday meeting, will be our final backlog ticket review of the year. We have, I think we are up to, I just wrote it down. We are getting so close to the end here. UX Prod 3579, and we will be working through those. Some of the ones that are, we now have a list that includes really recently created tickets, so I think there's not going to be as much. We're going to be able to go through those pretty quickly, I believe. But we will continue that process into the new year. And I am in the process of getting a list from Kalila of all of the tickets because she made a list of every ticket that's in the RA SIG realm. And we're curious if there are any that don't have developers assigned because so far we've only been looking at the Vega and Volaris tickets. So if there are tickets floating out there that don't have a development team assigned in Jira, we have not looked at them yet. So that's sort of the finishing touches on that before we pivot to prioritization in the new year. And then getting to flesh out some of these tickets that that raised to the top of the priority list. I did want to check in about if there are any agenda items for next Monday or whether or not we should cancel that meeting. Monday, December 15th, it would in theory be our last meeting of the year, but we don't have anything on the docket so far. So I want to put it out there if anyone has agenda items. We can wait until the end of this, until Thursday's meeting. But if we don't hear anything by Thursday, then potentially we will cancel that meeting. Any thoughts, Cornelia? Do you have anything that I've forgotten?
No. I think we are all a bit tired.
I hear you. Same. We're so close. We're so close. Okay, then with that, we will. And I'm going to be migrating our 2025 overview to 2026 with the new year. So we will carry over any agenda topics at the bottom of our where you can add new topics. So that will be, if you have any want to add to the bottom of this year's, you may, and they will carry over to 2026 if we haven't gotten to them. There's only two or three that we haven't gotten to from this current year.
I'm going to set up invitations for the next year tomorrow. If you want to get those to your email inbox, please let me know. Or you can be added later if you decide later. So we thought we might start again on January 8, what do we do then? Is that another fee fine meeting? Probably. Tom,
Oh,
will you
good.
available?
I think so. And hopefully my brain will actually be functioning. yes, January 8th. Right now, the only thing I have on my calendar is Vega. So I don't want to say my calendar's wide open, but yep, I'm available.
All right, so then we will continue our every other week cycle of fee fines on Thursday and ticket review the alternating Thursday, starting on the 8th. Great. All right, I will update all those pages on Confluence, and we will see some of you on Thursday. If we, I don't know whether to wish everyone happy holidays, happy new year yet or not, but I will. And then I'll probably do it again later. So I hope everyone has a great rest of your day and rest of your week. And we hope to see some of you on Thursday. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you,
Okay.
Sue. Thank
Have a
you.
good
Thanks,
day.
everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.